Hello and welcome to Infamous, the audio podcast. This is Brandon, or Mutilus on Discord.
This is Parker, go by One Who Parks on Discord.
And this is Aaron, I go by Treffenwood on Discord.
A few quick announcements today. As always, links are in the show notes. We have a small announcement. Our Patreon, John, won our monthly raffle, so he won some cool Infamous swag. And congrats,
John.
He has the uncanny ability to win every raffle he is part of.
I think that's karma for being a really quality
person. I was going to actually say the same thing. Yeah, John is a good person, and so a lot of good things tend to happen to him.
Yeah, John's one of those guys, whenever he's at the game store, I'm like, hey, John, what's up? Do you have like a goal or something being here? He's like, no, I'm just trying to spread goodwill. I was like, yeah, of course you are, John. That's what you're doing here.
Now, in the opposite of that, I find that people who are generally bad people have really bad stuff happen to them. Like, their roof caves in, and like rains in their living room, like stuff like that.
Yeah, comeuppance.
Yeah, deserved.
Yeah.
That's not what do you think, Aaron?
Abstain.
did you talk about your ceiling on the other podcast yet?
Yes.
Nice.
What? Okay, now, sorry.
This is 100%. Basically, imagine a walrus burst through Aaron's ceiling covered in water.
Oh, no.
That's basically what happened.
Aaron, you did not share that part. And I'm looking at your ceiling right now, and there's no drips, so.
No, happened? It's above him. It's on the first floor, I think.
Wait, you're on the second floor right now?
I'm in my basement right now.
But that's what I'm looking
at. Pictures are in the podcast chat.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Glad to know you pay attention.
Where in the podcast? I saw some stuff about
scroll
the
up.
Car.
The only direction you can move the chat, do that.
Oh, man. I'm doing it as fast as I can.
On the
look
14th?
Four pictures. It's not that far.
Oh, out. Shit. What, how did I miss this?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't
You're know. A bad friend.
Bruh. That is terabad.
Yeah, not great.
Has that had any progress yet? I know it basically ate your whole Thursday.
I ripped that hole into a hole that's twice its size to get rid of all of the waterlogged drywall and all the insulation above it. I've had two people come out to bids that are way higher than I thought they'd be. And that's where we're at with that.
Nice.
Does your homeowner's insurance cover that?
If I claimed it, it would.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not high enough that I'm going to file a homeowner's claim because then I pay for it for five fucking years.
We filed a claim when our washer and dryer overflowed. So it's just the washer, I guess. We have a second story laundry room, and it just pumped water onto our floor. It just rained like you remember Rainforest Cafe? Remember that?
Yeah.
It was Rainforest Cafe in my living room, just dripping out of every. We have inserted lighting in our ceiling.
Yeah, can lights.
Yeah, every one of those can lights was just a small waterfall. It looked really cool if it wasn't inside my house.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. Water is the bane of every fucking homeowner's existence.
Yeah.
I hate it.
It's crazy how we do all these things for convenience. Like, if you just stepped back and, and just complete, outside point of view, and you're like, so you bring fire into your house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do that. And like this explodable gas, you pump that into your house. Like, oh, yeah, we do that too. It's like, okay, what about these like wires carrying lightning? What's that about? It's like, oh yeah, we use that shit everywhere. You're like, what is the matter with you? Why? Like, it's like, it's very convenient.
It's the, there's the comedian who's talking about, like, when we talk to our grandchildren about some of the things we did when we were children. Mm-hmm. Like, he talks to his grandpa said, like, yeah, we used to wash our hands with strychnine and stuff like that. It's just, and then he said, what are the things we'll talk to our children about? He's like, when I was a kid, we used to
pour mercury on our cuts.
Yeah, we used to drive the cars. And the kids go, drive cars? You mean those things with the four wheels, those big heavy things? Oh, yeah. We would drive them at nearly 100 miles an hour. Didn't they weigh a lot? Tons. They weighed tons. Mm-hmm. It's like, geez, did anybody get hurt? It was the number one way to die for most of my life.
And be injured. Yeah. It was the most dangerous thing ever.
Yeah. It's just it's like, you did this often? It's like, everyone did it. Everyone could do it. There was the bar to do it was so low.
You almost had to. Yeah. You're basically required to do this. Not to mention, now imagine vehicles that were like 10 times the size of a normal vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
We make people drive them for ungodly periods consecutively and don't let them sleep.
Yeah.
And then they just randomly pancake other vehicles. Mm-hmm. Like,
and that same size vehicles, we'd paint them yellow, put our children inside without seatbelts, and let them cavort around the city with strangers.
Yeah.
These are just things we did.
Who don't check where the kids are getting off.
Yeah.
They just get off the bus wherever.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So what's next? Are we talk about currently playing? Is that what's next, Parker?
Yeah, no, actually. The next thing is news.
News.
Hey, news! News!
News! News! News! News! News! News! News! News! News! News! News! News! News! News!
So, the Sinister Six box and Gwinnem. We have information coming out of those boxes. We already knew some about their character cards, but we have more clear version of those cards now, along with tactics cards in those boxes. People have been able to crack them open, and we see what's inside. So I'm going to start with the Sinister Six. Let's talk about them real quick.
The Sinister founding members.
The founding members is one of the cards, but
I see. Go ahead.
Just the actual characters first. So we'll start with Electro. The man who should shock does shock, and that makes perfect sense. Thank you again, AMG, for your adherence to canon.
You mean the shocker, this guy?
No, the shocker is actually a man who should not shock, and he does not shock. The Electro does shock, because he should shock.
I'm not following.
Electro is a size 2. Small mover, although he has been confirmed to be on a medium base. So he's short move, medium base. 4 coster with 6 health on both sides. His stat line is 3-4-3. As you might imagine, he does have 2 energy attacks. His first one is a builder. It's range 4 with 5 dice, has a wild shock. His second, called Overload the Grid, is range 3, 6 dice for 4 power. And if that sounds like a bad value, it is until you read its new special ability. When creating the dice pool for his attack, he can destroy a terrain feature of size 3 or less within 3, and then add the dice to the attack roll. So think of it kind of like a pocket smash, restricted to size 3, not his size. For just his spender, he can add the terrain size to his attack. You want to stop here on his stats and attacks, or you want to keep moving forward? Because you tell me.
No, let's keep going.
Okay, because his power package, his abilities, are really, I think, where the money is. The first ability, called Ride the Wires, is a two-cost ability that kind of tips a hat to the fact that he can turn himself into electricity and move through electrical wires. So assuming there are electrical wires attaching all the terrain on the board that you just can't see because that definition doesn't exist, it simulates that. You choose a terrain feature of size 2 or greater within 3 of him. He immediately drops all objective tokens and places within 2 of that terrain feature. So think of it kind of like a targeted place effect. But he can move very far with his, because he's targeting something of size 2, which could be really long or really wide or greater, right? So it could even be a giant building. He can disappear and then reappear within 2 of any of that. Live Wire, which is a reactive ability for 2 costs. If a character ends a movement within 3 of him, he immediately counter-strikes them, which is rolling 4 dice and 1 damage for every crit and hit, not crit and wild. So it's a higher damage propensity counter-strike. And finally, Electrostatic for 1. It is if he's another reactive ability, if he's targeted by an attack, after he is attacked, if the attacking character is within 3, they suffer 1 damage and gain shock immediately. He's immune to shock himself, being made of electricity, sort of, and he can fly.
All right. So what do you guys think of Electro? Aaron, go.
Thumbs up.
Okay.
Do you need more than that?
Actually, let's all just do let's just all give it a shotgun rating 1 to 10.
Ooh, shotgun rating 1 to 10. By itself, without affiliation.
Yeah, just the character. These are supposed to be fast. Shotgun, go.
Say it. You're going to make me defend it then.
Say it. No, I'm not. Just say a number.
6.
Okay. Parker.
5.
I also think 6. Okay.
Smart people.
Parker, What's your favorite thing about Electro?
My favorite thing is Ride the Wires. I think it's really cool that they make up for the fact that he's short movement with the ability to place. That's a really wild amount of space depending upon the board. So that's a really cool way for him to threaten like tons of stuff that we don't normally think about characters threatening. So I really, really like that he has that. Ride the Wires is also novel because of who he is. Like, I like that again. It's very Electro.
It's a really interesting way to translate that mechanic into the game. Uh-huh. I'm going to be honest. When I was reading this, I was at work, so I was kind of hurrying through it. I read Ride the Wires, and I got to about the first sentence, and I just yelled, God damn it, into the store. Because all I read was, blah, 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 objective token within two. And I just go, son of a bitch! Like, he's another fucking stealer! It's... but then I read it again, I was like, oh, that's a really cool ability. Good job, AMG.
Yeah.
So it's also my favorite part. Aaron, do you have a favorite thing that isn't Ride the Wires?
I was going to say his entire superpower suite. Mm-hmm. Live Wire is super, super interesting because it's for crits and hits, not crits and wild, which take your potential damage up significantly from other tricks and traps abilities that we've seen. And the fact that all of his abilities are a... two or one instead of the three cost means that if you want to play him under Professor X or Steve One, there's some really interesting things that he's going to be able to do.
Hmm.
I think is it. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I agree. He's he feels like he's going to be very fun to put on the table.
I actively dislike is a harsh, but I'm going to say it. Actively dislike his spender.
I think I agree.
So normally for a four-cost spender, I'm expecting eight dice, mm-hmm. right? 3, 8, 4 is a pretty standard attack with probably a wild trigger to do something interesting. For this, you have to have a size 3 or greater terrain to get that something interesting, which is just one extra die to pick it to 9. Otherwise, if this attack was 3, 8, 4 and nothing written on it, I think people would be like, that's just very meh. And that's essentially what it is. Occasionally it will be better.
I actually think it's really sad because it makes it instantly harder to play Ride the Wires if you play this.
Right. So there's a lot of negative synergy there.
Yeah.
Because he's destroying the terrain. You could play with Magneto to auto-generate the constructs that he can then use to either overload the grid or ride the wires. So there are ways to mitigate the
cost,
the counter synergy of wanting terrain and wanting to destroy terrain. But he could be very interesting in a list that wants to get rid of the terrain because you don't have terrain throwers and you use overload to do that. But of all the spenders in the game, I would put it below the 50% mark.
I would say I'm not a huge fan of the spender either. I think it's just whatever. I think you're rarely going to use it because he's got such a good use for power in general. But as far as the counter synergy with his spender and his Ride the Wires, I actually totally disagree. The distance he can cover with Ride the Wires, you're intentionally going to set up the spender. Like, you're going to put him exactly within range of the train he wants. And he being able to ride the wires within 3, how often do you have a model not within the range 3 of any train features? It's super rare. And if you're trying to do it, it's going to be even easier.
Well, like, so Ride the Wires has to be size 2 or greater, which I thought was really good. Because oftentimes, if you're playing, if both you and your opponent have terrain throwing models, after about turn 3, that terrain can start to look pretty damn sparse, other than the random trash can sitting around.
I would agree if we're talking about somebody like MODOK, where it's like he needs ammunition, he's going to keep firing this terrain off, but he can ride the wires every turn and continually reposition to set up more chains. Like, it's not like he's static. He's going to be constantly moving to optimize his ability to do that.
Static.
And so I think he's going to kind of just wander around the table, like jumping from train to train. And even if you're blowing up the train going after him, he's just going to keep going.
Sure. Thank you for but then his, you like that.
Yeah, I think I appreciate you laughing at my really fast joke, Aaron. Thank you.
What did you say?
You said it's not like he's going to be static. And I was like, static, Natch.
I don't like it when outside forces, such as my quote-unquote requirement to move to the next terrain piece, I'm going to be within range that you're not throwing, to dictate where my model has to go. Because my model might need to go somewhere else to be scenario relevant, as opposed to in the corner where the last terrain piece is that he can port to.
Dude. Yeah, but he doesn't have to be there. Like, if you only need to be within the range of this terrain, if you need to move. Like, if you're where you want to be, it doesn't matter. It's just a, it's just an emergency exit button. But the fact that he can, like, place the, like, you have, like, the cargo container from the construction site set within range 3 of that, and then within range 2 of it on the backside, is like, it's like a fucking 20-inch place. Like, it's so crazy.
I think that as mobile as he could be, right, with the right terrain, he loves to play against somebody who's not going to move the right terrain around as much. Also, I think Livewire and Electrostatic, he also likes to see things that are moving around a lot and probably lower health pools or where shock is going to be really debilitating. So I think he's really strong into skirmisher kind of list, right? We got lots of chargers and lots of long movers who are trying to do little damage and moving around and stuff. He's going to be able to place back into the place he wants to be to do more.
I really like can I point out a line of play?
Go ahead.
You could Spirit of Wakanda, and then he can immediately ride the wires, walk, pick up an objective, and walk back. And so he can, like, pick up a far B and still back up to the center line. I mean, there are no extract Bs, but, you know, like, Fs. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. No, he could do some cool stuff for sure.
Or Senators. He could place, pick up a center, and walk, and then still shoot somebody in the middle of that.
If the terrain he's targeting is long enough, yeah. He just needs to be, like, vertically across the field. But yeah.
Well, even if we're talking like a dumpster, and it's like the short side of the dumpster, we're talking about 6 inches plus 3 inches plus his base width plus the width of the dumpster, which is about 2 inches. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a crazy place.
Yeah.
Let's see. That's 6, 12, 15, 17. Call his base 2. That's like 19 inches into a 36-inch board. Yeah, he's picking up centerline objectives and walking backwards.
Yeah.
After attacking. Or double moving backwards.
He's only moving back short, though, which is...
On a medium base still. It's a quarter inch slower than a normal model.
Yeah.
But he spent zero actions. He could double move backwards if he wanted to. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, they're definitely cool things. People will explore options with him. But I think he's also... I think he's a slam dunk into skirmisher types. I think they're going to hate this guy a lot.
Yeah, he's a really good chaser, obviously. You could even play him with somebody like Professor X and you just give him one power. And he can just immediately ride the wires, shoot somebody, gain one, and pick up an objective.
I think Cyclops would also work. Like there are lots of ways. Mm-hmm. Like, Inhumans.
He'd be really good with Cyclops, too, because you could dial in that leadership range exactly every turn. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've talked about this guy a lot.
I think he's probably the most exciting out of the bunch, I think, what we've got so far. I think a lot of people are excited about him. That's my personal opinion. He's the most exciting to me so far.
So who's next?
The next one is actually someone who was quasi-revealed, but we wanted to make sure we could see his card a little bit better. But now we've seen the Sandman, so we know what Sandman does now. And Aaron refused to talk about it till we could get a really clear vision of it. So there is so much to talk about Sandman because he's got his constructs and stuff. So I'm going to try to go pretty fast through him. So for anybody who really wants to read about Sandman, you can get into more detail as you will. But I'm going to give you the skinny. Sandman is a size 3, short moving. As far as we know, I think medium base. Or is that a large base? It's hard to tell because his pictures are all resized. 4 coster. 4-4-3 is his stat line. He's got 3 attacks. A range 2, 5 dice builder that wild throws. Size 2 or less. A beam that gains no power and pushes characters if it deals damage. Beam 3 with 5 dice. And then finally, punch in your ticket is his spender. It is a range 2, 8 dice for 4. That's what Aaron just talked about. And you add 2 dice if a sand construct, one of his minions, is within 2 of the target.
For each sand construct.
Sorry, for each, yes. So we can go up to 12. So reabsorb is one of his powers. It lets him pick a sand construct and eat it, basically, and he removes damage from himself. They create sand constructs. You can have up to 2 at a time at the start of his activation. If there are fewer than 2, he hurts himself. And by cutting himself 2 damage, he places 1 in play within 2 of himself. And then sand manipulation. He gains 1 power whenever a sand construct deals damage or suffrage damage. That's the same as Nick Fury. He has healing factor 1 and wall crawler. So do you want to pause for a second and talk about sand constructs?
So when he summons the constructs, do they start in play or he has to make them?
Says you may have to. I think they have to start in play, right? Because that's just the rules for.
Generally, minions do.
Yeah, yeah. The grunts. Okay. I think grunts always start in play. So I think he starts with.
Let's
two
go ahead and read the grunts then, just to see.
Okay, the grunts are short moving, size threes. They have ones across the board defensively and two health. They have sand slap, which has the same ability as his beam. If it deals damage, pushes a target character short. Only four dice, range two. They can't pick up, hold, contest, or interact with objective tokens. So no touching objective tokens or contesting
they
things.
They cannot score, yeah.
Yeah. They have an ability called Difficult Terrain. When they suffer damage from a physical attack only, you reduce the amount of damage suffered by one to minimum one. They cannot be thrown and do not suffer collisions. At the end, then the final ability they have is Dust to Dust. At the end of their Sandman's activation, if the character is not within three of him, it immediately disappears. So no. they have to be within three of him. So if you find a way to separate them in any way, then they can fall apart.
Well, it's at the end of when?
At the end of Sandman's activation.
Yeah, so that's not going to matter.
Well, it does if... because
it just stops you from doing stupid shit.
Right. So the grunts move first, and then Sandman decides after that that he moves beyond three of them. At the end of his activation, that grunt would immediately just fall apart.
Yeah, I understand, but like obviously you wouldn't do that unless there was a reason to.
Yes.
I'm just saying that that's not going to really matter to your opponent.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. I didn't realize he took damage to bring them out. That's interesting.
He has healing factor and he can reabsorb them. Yeah, that helps a lot. He can reabsorb them, but it costs power to reabsorb them.
Yeah. But like that doesn't help you because you'll just have to take damage to bring them out again. Mm-hmm. Unless you just say, I don't need the grunts.
Yeah.
You could just use them as heal batteries and just like have them running around behind you.
But they're only healing one.
They only heal one when you absorb them?
Yeah.
But you could heal...
Okay.
I was just saying you could heal three.
The one thing it does when you reabsorb them, you place him within one of the sand construct. So it's a place effect as well.
Mm. I mean, spend six, that's heal cool. two seems shitty.
I don't disagree, but... So can he just drop them out, or is it... When does that happen?
Yeah, at the start of his activation, he can suffer two damage.
Or can he do it twice?
Once.
Okay.
So you can place one sand construct. He could then immediately absorb it for three power... to effectively place three, kind of. And so for three power and one health, he gets a free three place every turn, is one way to think of that combination.
He also has healing factor, though, so he's going to net neutral at the end.
Correct. So,
he has to have three power.
Yeah, spend three power to place, basically.
And
a lot of words, but...
Have the health pool to not die when you take two damage.
Yeah.
So can't be on five or four. But yeah, he has the ability to, just like we talked about Electro, to go different places. You may or may not be expecting based on where the sand constructs decide to move on their turn, or if there aren't any there, for him to just take some damage to place one down.
The interesting thing, I think, is you could just run these at your opponent to get power, because they obviously can't let them sit there because he's coming in with a 12-die attack. And so if they kill them, though, like if they start shooting him with physical attacks, it might take two or three hits to kill them. So he's gaining, like, four power for you killing his two constructs, maybe. And now he's got... Now he just takes damage and hits you with a 10-die spender.
He doesn't... Yeah.
If you don't kill them, they hit you, and he gains power anyway.
Yeah. I think you absolutely have to kill these guys.
I think it's actually about hitting him at the same time. So, like, you have to do enough damage to him to where he doesn't want to resummon them. Neogenic Recombinator might be really good on this guy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously,
Parker, what do you...
Go ahead, Parker.
Oh, wait. I was going to say, I think he's supposed to be a really annoying, like, not really scenario piece, but somebody who's setting your opponent up where you want them to be. He has like so many opportunities to push. Like, the push and then throw in is something that he just does out the yin-yang. He will have, like, six... Like, with just the grunts, he has four opportunities to push. And then the sandblast is a beam that can push every time he does it. Like, he could be pushing so many things if he's able to do a damage with any of his stuff. And then, like you guys said, if he ever gets the opportunity to do his spender, you feel great about that, and it's probably not that unusual. But he
seems
really,
like a fun bruiser.
Yeah, he is really going to dislodge your opponent. However, with just healing factor one, he does have access to exceptional healing. With just healing factor one, he himself is not that difficult to remove. Like, that's all he's got. 6 health and some stats. And I don't even know if you need to kill the constructs. I think you just take his head off, right? I think you just shoot him. If you can get through exceptional healing, that's it. Like, he has nothing else to protect himself.
That's fair. I have to see it in play as to know who to want to kill.
Yeah, he looks fun.
I think the... Maybe I'm wrong, but I think the sand constructs are a trap. I think trying to kill them... the being immune to throws and not suffering collisions makes them like little rockets. It's going to be really difficult to like collateral them.
It's mostly just the action economy. Like, if you're putting potentially two actions into each of them to kill them, like,
that's terrible.
DR, it's hard to guarantee that you'll kill them.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows how often grunts live when they shouldn't, and a lot of them don't have fucking DR.
Right.
And so, like, he's like, oh no, I put fucking three actions into killing these two idiot grunts. And you're like, that was not worth it. That was 3 of my 10 actions for a round.
I think it's a trap. All of his abilities are pretty short range. He kind of has to stand there after he does them. He's just hoping that he's pushing and throwing all your stuff around so you're not in a good position to attack him. That's his best case scenario, right? Is he's done all the things he needs to do, and he's ending the turn with you having to spend activations trying to get back to him. But if you have a range 3 gun, I think you just rapid fire him down with any 3-pointer, and I think he just falls over. Because healing factor and exceptional healing is specifically like susceptible to that kind of stuff, just little piddly attacks.
Yep.
Oh, you forgot the most important part. Wall crawler.
On the short mover. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know why they do that shit. Like, yeah. I get that it's a keyword, and so some things interact with it. Like, he can get over whatever the fuck that stupid card is, the impenetrable wall card from Shield.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. All right.
All right. So the last guy that we didn't get to talk about from Adepticon was the Vulture, and we now know more specifically what he does. We got a clear view of his card. I'm going to go pretty fast through this one as well. He is a 3-cost, size 2, medium mover with 5 health. He's got 3s across the board. He has a 5 dice, range 2 builder that has a wild bleed, a range 3, 8 dice spender for 4, and he can throw a size 3 or less medium with it before damage is dealt. A lot of key parts of that card.
It's an omni throw too, right?
It is.
Omni throw,
medium, no trigger before.
8 dice, yeah.
Yeah, so
that's very good.
It's very good. Like, it's the best version of that, of all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has hit and run, that costs 2. He's got a really interesting version of Iceman's ability kind of in reverse for enemies. Abduct costs 2, and he places somebody 2 if he begins his move action within 2 of them.
So somebody, you mean an enemy character?
Yes, enemy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the reverse of Iceman. So, unlike ally, it's only enemy.
Okay.
He has scientific hubris on crits and flight.
All right. How does Vulture feel on the whole?
3.8 out of 10.
Oof.
Really? That
really?
Low?
Really? Man, I thought that spender would at least get him to a 5.
No.
He's definitely the least inspiring of the ones we've read.
And see, I think that's why people won't take him, because he's not some awesome toolbox 3. But man, for a 3, this guy is pretty turned up, right?
Until you look at the left side of his card. Like, look at that again.
Yeah,
yeah, but he's got hit and run.
He's made of glass.
But he's got, like, he should never be ending his turn next to somebody, right?
But how many hit and run people only have range 2 builders?
That is a big problem. You are correct. The range 2 builder is super sad for him.
Because it's not charge. It's basically charge backwards, but it's terrible if you need to stay within range.
Because
you can't go in and double attack with hit and run. He just can't.
Right.
So it's not action economy. It's, like you said, it's a safety mechanic. Mm-hmm. Well, moving medium away from people doesn't save you when you're fucking dog balls for stats.
Yep. I could tell you
every model in the game could just walk up and kill him.
Yeah.
Like, even Wong could just walk up and faceplant him.
I could tell you that he feels very much like a Vulture. They nailed this guy from the comics. He goes in and hits you with his claws. Nah. He grabs you and picks you up and drops you. Like, that's what he does. Those are the things he does.
It's weird for a spender to be one of the two best things on his card. And like you said, Brandon, that does make it really intriguing. But you're going to be lucky to get that off before he dazes. If your opponent can target prioritize, I want to say correctly, but situationally dependent correctly, he'll never get it off.
The only thing I will say about him is that Spider-Foes 3s are in a really weird place. You're either like God tier or bad? I don't know. Like, Kraven and Mysterio are both really good at stuff they do, but have obvious flaws. Like, obvious flaws. And so, like, there's just not that many options for affiliated 3s, which is generally a really bad thing.
Yeah. It is a bad thing, and I would have rather Vulture come out to be a, let's call it, well-rounded 3 that didn't have just a complete dog shit stat line with a great attack and one really interesting superpower.
Not being speed long, I think, is surprising.
Yeah, they definitely tuned this guy down to make him a 3, and it makes him hard to play. But man, there's some cool things about him. I want him to work, but...
See, I'm with you. I don't think he's as bad as I think the internet has decided he is. They're like, he's the unplayable model of the box. Like, he is not unplayable, especially in foes.
I think he's a pretty mediocre 3, which unfortunately in our day and age means bad.
Yep, so that's the problem. It's the power creep.
Yeah, you're never going to compare him to people like X23 or, Magic or somebody like that who's just got like stuff on stuff on stuff that makes them good. Like, and he's competing with Lizard theoretically in faction, which is just the most opposite model ever. I really wish they had given him something to kind of make him stand out other than just a superb spender on a 3-pointer. And it's just an odd place for the model, is where I think everybody thinks of Vulture as like a tricky skirmisher, fast moving. And I don't think they really represent that with the model. Anyway, not trash, but not inspiring. What's next?
The last model that it feels like it came out in before our last podcast, but I checked, it actually came out the day after our last podcast, is Gwynnum. So Gwen Stacy, we now know her card, and she is a barrel of interesting. I'm excited to know what you guys think. So I'm going to try to go as fast as I can because we have so many cards today. But she has some interesting stuff. The stat line she has is she's a size 2 long mover for 4. She has 6 health on her front side, 7 on her back side. She is a 4-2-3. She has 2 physical attacks. Her regular is a range 3, 5 dice. She gains power for damage. She has something very similar to her original spider technique, which is... she re-rolls a dice if she already targeted rather than adding dice if she already targeted. And if she's been advanced or placed already, she advances long, which is the same as the other one. Her spender is called Maximum Gwynnum. It is range 3, 7 dice for 3. She removes damage from herself for every damage dealt, like Venom does. And it also has a trigger called Rampage on a wild and a hit. It deals 1 damage to each other character within 3 of her. Which is what the
it is a bigger flash. Version of spider tendrils from Agent Venom. Yeah, it's a wider area.
No, Agent Venom is 3.
Is it 3?
It's 3.
I always played it as 2.
It's 2.
It's 2? Sure it's I thought two. It was 3.
Look at that.
Oh, crazy. Check.
Agent Venom, symbiotic tendrils, 2.
Oh, look at me. It is wider. So she just you heard it here first. Better than Agent Venom, straight up.
I mean, nobody's ever argued that Gwen was not better than Flash.
Yeah. she has a throw, size 3 or terrain, medium, 4-3 cost. She has a cool attack back ability called Pick on Someone Your Own Size for 2. If you target an ally, and if the attacker is within 3 of Gwen, she can spend 2 power and immediately attack the attacker. So it's if the attacker is within 3 of an ally they targeted.
It's vengeance, basically. If you hurt her friends, she attacks you.
Right. But specifically not that you have to be close to your friends. You have to be close to the attacker.
Yeah. You have to be close to the attacker, yeah.
Yeah.
Which would be irrelevant if you weren't within three of the attacker, because you couldn't attack him.
Right. She has spider sense for two dice. She's a wall crawler, which finally is actually useful because she is a long mover.
Long mover's pretty relevant.
Yeah.
All right. So what can we say first? Let's do, I know we didn't do this for the other two models because that we were less inspired on them. I want the 1 to 10 rating again.
Okay.
Parker, why don't you go first?
I'm going to swing, and you guys might hate me for this, but I saw stars when I saw her. So I'm going to say 8.
I am going to say 10.
Whoa. Ooh. Okay. I thought I was swinging for the stars.
Coward. I think this 9. Model is pushed to fucking hell.
Really?
Oh, okay. I actually have the opposite opinion.
Holy shit.
I feel like this model is, and again, we haven't seen it on the table yet, and this is definitely a model that might not translate the way you think. It's got a lot going on. I think this model is like the right power scale for a 4-pointer. Like if you want a premium 4, this is the ceiling. Like, and the reason I rate it so high is because it isn't overtuned, I don't think. I think it's good. I think it's strong, but this isn't a Logan. This isn't a Spider Woman, even, I don't think. I think it's still noticeably below like the A tier models. Oof. But she's good. But obviously everyone knows that she's got the huge downside of her alter ego is Gwen Stacy. So unless she was really good, she's never seeing the table.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about what she can do, right?
Fucking everything.
I'll save my meme for the end. Okay. So she has Venom's throw. She has better than We Are Venom because it also has super tendrils on it. She's got super spider technique because it's reroll dice instead of add dice, and then also still has the move ability
at longer range.
Spider sense is on a much better frame. This is the biggest spider sense model we've seen, right?
No.
Like, you could argue Peter, but, I mean, isn't Peter 11 hit points, or is he 12?
He's 12, and he has a better stat point. Okay.
But he's got one less hit point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he rerolls everything, and...
Yeah, no, he has a better version of spider senses.
Yeah.
But this is the biggest frame we've seen spider senses on.
Oh, you mean at health pool. Sure.
Yeah. I love her reactive attack ability, because it has counterplay. And it has value. I think that's a really well-designed part of her kit. As where Venom is, like, it's so hard to utilize because, you know, they just never attack him once he plays Lethal Protector. So, all right, so we'll talk about mainly what she can't do, which is Web Snare and Web Line. Not having either of those abilities clearly was required for this kit. But is also the lack of them is why she has these strong abilities, right? Like, do I think we all agree on that?
Well, okay, you're drawing direct parallels to, I guess, her two previous alter egos, if you will. Whereas I'm looking at her as a fresh character.
Sure.
Like, you don't look at Bill and go, well, fuck, he didn't have webline. Goddamn trash.
Well, I mean, it's the same model.
He gave her a 9. He thinks she's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
You are correct. She does not have webline or lifesaver.
Right. But, I mean, we're talking about a model that has the same alter ego. It's the same slot we're competing with.
Hard disagree. Holy shit.
She's trying to replace either Venom or Gwen.
Oh, my God. I need a minute.
Okay. Take your minute. I'll keep talking.
Aaron, who does she replace? Who are you excited about her replacing?
Fucking anyone.
Oh, she doesn't replace Logan, right? She doesn't correct.
So
she doesn't replace Rhino. She doesn't replace Spider Woman. She doesn't do anything that the A tier models do.
So the models are A tier because they are specialized.
Yes.
She might be the best generalist 4 in the game.
Oh. She might be the best skirmishing 4-pointer.
Challenge accepted there. There it is.
Let's just name other skirmishing 4-pointers. Models that are quick, they have good attacks, not great, but like their big thing is mobility and toolkit stuff.
Agent Venom, not trying to be cheeky, like he actually is
It's probably pretty similar.
He's pretty similar. He's just like a ranged version of her, or a little bit more ranged version of her.
Yeah.
Like, she's not better than Black Panther. Like, Black Panther is like one of the best journalists.
Not even close.
Yeah, like, one of the best journalists in the game, and he's just better than her, right?
Yeah. So if we're talking about like her as a mercenary out of faction, who's she competing with and beating?
I am not convinced that she is worse than Black Panther.
Okay, what does she do that Black Panther can't do?
She has significantly more movement potential.
But what do you mean by movement potential? Like the distance she could travel? Like, so is it relevant distance, or is she just moving to move?
All of it. Well, I think it's highly relevant. So all of it depends on exactly where you play her and what you want her to do. Sure. But the first place I play her is Midnight Suns and or Storm, probably Storm. So if she's able to place herself on her turn, she places, she attacks, she gets a long move, she attacks again, she gets another long move after getting full rerolls on the first person she just double tapped.
Wait, why does she get full rerolls on the first attack?
On the second one.
Oh, okay. So she's getting one set of rerolls. Okay.
Correct. So two long moves, two five dice attacks, one with full rerolls is not the most offensive output you can ever put out, right? That's what your Lugans are for. But being able to reposition yourself after that second attack, which is doing probably decent damage to, I'm going to say, the location of your choosing, realizing that it's still constrained by a long move. But placing yourself out of retaliation range or onto the secure, like wherever you need to go, having basically a free hit and run every turn is insane when you're coupling that with long movement.
Right, but it's not a repetitive thing. If you just walk out of the game, now she's basically worthless the next turn.
Doesn't have to be the game, but...
Sure, but like...
She just has to place out of range escape. Three.
Right, but if you're using it to escape, now your storm leadership doesn't work, your bump doesn't work.
Bump like, works every time.
Yeah, but you're not attacking twice.
But
you're giving up the action later for a move now.
So pretend that's I'm just dueling different. With another range three model, right?
Sure.
I could be outside of range three to start. I could bump into range three, attack twice, use the second move or the move from the second attack to just move right outside of his range three. Now they are effectively staggered and have to move to attack me, whereas all I have to do is bump to attack them.
Sure.
Now, and granted, it's all going to depend on the scenario and the game state, but you know, she can rotate extremely well while attacking.
Yeah, no, she's a great rotating model. She's an amazing skirmisher. She can be in almost all over the table and doing whatever she wants. She's very much like Zemo in that regard. She's going to get where she needs to get.
Sure, but when you combine that with her ability to heal to full with her spender, if she's got, you know, the power and desire, the ability to throw size 3 models or terrain, the got your back, however we want to call that ability. It's not got your back, but
retaliatory strike.
Sure, retaliatory. And all of that makes for an incredibly great model. And then I got to the last part, and I'm like, oh, surely she's just going to die. I'm like, fucking spider sense? Are you kidding me? On a model that gets to heal to full whenever she decides to pop off on her spender? I can see myself playing this model in almost any list. Like, I'm going to have a lot of Hellfire recency. Like, sure, I'll power up her Dark Rage and her pick on someone your own size with the extra power. I'll use the extra healing on a Spider Sense character.
I just feel like you're only looking at the good parts and saying that she's just better than everything, and I don't think that's true. Is the only reason I'm pushing back.
Fair enough.
Like yes. What we're talking about, her crowning achievement that she does better than anybody else is basically take long moves, which is great, but like you have to utilize it. At one point, what does it matter? Like, okay, you long move yet again. Who cares?
Sure.
Like, you're just standing on top of me, hitting me.
And
what I'm saying is the combination of the six things on her card, from her long move to every other thing down to wall crawler, is fucking A-, right? Unlike we just did Vulture, who had two things that were A-, maybe, and everything else, like, forget about it. Like, who cares that he's got a range 2-5 dice attack that does nothing? Okay, every single one of the things on her card is very good. So when you take six very good things, I think that makes an exceptional model.
Well, then Psylocke should also be in all of your lists, right? Because she has A-, she has six A-minus things as well. She's a four coster.
I would even say Psylocke is better than this model.
And I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that we need more 10 ratings, right? Because if she's a 10, there's more than
yeah, there. If she's a 10, there's 20 10s.
I don't know about 20, but there's at least five. At least five.
And well, it's like we were talking about earlier, like her in X-Men. It's like, yeah, but when the hell is she going to be in an X-Men list? Like, it just doesn't work. Like, you're going to give up Logan, or are you just going to run her as an additional four instead of your other good fours that you're already playing?
By the way, Psylocke does not have six good things on her card.
Mm-hmm. How many does she have?
What? Three.
She only has three good things? Okay.
Three things that I think are clearly above average.
So Wallcrawler is clearly above average because she only has six things on her card.
On Gwenna's card?
Yeah.
Her long move, and then the five things above Wallcrawler.
So you think just being a long move character makes you is a great thing about your character?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
That's the hill I'll die on.
All right.
But so Psylocke,
all long movers are great. They're already eights. Like, you just got to get to 10.
You show me the left side of their card with a long move, and I've got half a stiffy already.
All right. Well, I don't.
Okay.
I think you guys are funny that you're arguing so hard over the difference between a 9 and a 10. Because you both agree that she's really good.
Aaron thinks this is the next broken model that's going to, like, wreck the meta. And I just totally disagree with that.
I would actually be curious to know if he thinks that.
No, he didn't say that verbatim. I'm obviously paraphrasing. But he did say that she's, like, super overtuned and crazy strong. I disagree with that. I think the reason I rate her so highly is because I think she does fit within the game. The models that get played right now are all better than her in the 4-point slot. But she is competitive with them in a generic way, which is kind of what Aaron was saying, is that she isn't better than them at anything, but she is a very good model. And yeah, but like, welcome to list building an MCP in 2024. Every model you have needs to be amazing at what it does.
You are not wrong. I tend to build my fours for specific purposes and keep my threes to be relatively generic.
Yeah.
But if I were to swap that up and to see how I could go with, you know, a super killy or super tanky three with generic fours, again, I'm excited to play her. I think she has all the tools to be successful. She might not make every list. I agree with everything you're saying. But this character with this card should be competitively playable for years to come.
I would agree with that.
I think there's...
I
think one of the things about her that's kind of interesting is that she's one of... The first one person I actually thought of for her was Zemo. And I know that seems odd. Like, why compare her to a three-coster that has a little bit different kit?
Totally agree.
But I feel like her like best-case scenario is similar to Zemo's best-case scenario. Like, rerolling a bunch of dice and moving around. Like, that's when he said it's best. And one of the things that's interesting about her is she can't go and get him really at all, which is really weird. Because when Zemo is range, you know, long move plus range three from something, he can charge Spender. Mm-hmm. If he has two more power, reroll those six dice all plus one more reroll, and then move again to stab them a final time. Like, he can go get anyone super easily. She can move once, attack them with five dice.
Move again.
Yeah. That's not going to do anything unless she did enough damage to throw. So, yeah. Like, there is a lot of, like, she does. But then
that, it completely invalidates her free move, because she can't walk away from you if she's trying to throw you.
Sure. Well, what I'm saying is, I'm talking about, let's go chase down a Shadow Cat. Let's go chase down a something, right? Let's. And I know you can't reroll like a Shadow Cat, but let's go chase a long mover, Quicksilver, whatever it is that's trying to get away from you. Yeah. Pick one model. Or a medium mover anyway that's trying to get away from you. And you need to move range long and attack them with the best attack you can get. And that's not Gwynnum. So she's actually going to be more of a kind of stick in, and you guys have said it right, rotator. She's going to be really good at moving around and like dancing around the fight and always be on the outside of the fight, contributing to the fight. And I think that's really cool. It's a really like cool, like interesting kind of skirmishing soloist that's always dancing around the edge of the fight while still contributing to it. That's a really cool thing. But I think you'll need exactly that in your list. And most in situations, either you need to kind of ball up and sit on the thing you're trying to control, or you need to spread out and like do a lot of one-on-one fights. And I don't know if she does either of those things really well or any better than anybody else, I suppose.
So let me paint this picture. You go into Gwynnum on your turn because she's holding an objective for whatever reason. My spider sense go off a little bit, and for whatever reason, you leave her on two, which on a six health character is not unheard of.
Sure.
You know, if I don't have any damage to begin the turn with. I'm like, great, I'm going to bump because I'm playing Rune Stones. I'm then going to Maximum Gwenum. I'm going to get slightly lucky on the roll. I'm going to heal my 4 damage off. I'm then going to Symbiote Spider Technique, the same model. Now I rolled 7 dice, followed by 5 dice with a full rerolls into that model, probably doing more damage than you did to me, potentially dazing you, getting a long move, using the power I gained off the rerollable Symbiote Spider Technique to then throw someone off the point I just moved on. Like, that's a ball-breaking turn, going from you trying to put down my Gwenum to me dazing you back, healing all of the damage, moving somewhere where you can't wake up and retaliate, and throwing someone else off a point.
I mean, now, it sounds like fortunate dice plus 7 power. It's going to be good most of the time.
I'm just saying, I don't think that is... Obviously, it is best case scenario, but not a pipe dream. Like, that's going to happen.
Sure, I mean, but at the same time, like... People go into grunts and get killed back. Like, anything's going to happen. Like,
I think that's going to happen with a relative
high frequency. I think he's right. It's a false equivalency to say that anything could happen because, of course, this game models are designed to do some things and they have a cap, right? And the Gwenum has exactly what you're talking about, the ability to, like, make your opponent pay for going into her.
If that was the case, just regular Venom would be played more because he does the exact same thing.
Perhaps
except
better.
He gets to hit you an extra time.
And then he gets to stand at that point, and you can't take it back from him. When Gwenum rotates, she's leaving
sure.
that
the
point,
rotation
right?
is a key part, but there's but, a reason but she's giving
like,
up.
What I'm saying is I don't like the rotation, because if I'm battling over a midline D, I need a guy there. I don't want
her to
leave.
Well, it's clearly not bad, because you obviously don't rotate when you shouldn't, but you have the right. ability to rotate is important.
Parker's like, I have to move. Gosh dang it, I wanted to stay here.
Just
I
want to move directly at the enemy.
Like, I don't like it. I will say...
Okay, I have things I need to say. I've been waiting for this several minutes. I'm sorry. I'm going to forget these things if I don't say them.
Go.
Okay. So, people are just assuming that she's, like, the best of the combination of Venom and Gwen. And obviously, she has a lot of fun things that the other models have had, like the throw and the spider technique. But she doesn't have the three most important things that are the reason those models get played. She doesn't have Lifesaver, she doesn't have Webline, she doesn't have Symbiotic Instincts. Those three things not being on this card are going to impact her ability to be competitive in the meta. Because those are the parts of those models that make them competitive. Like, people don't play Gwen because she has spider technique. That does not happen. Yes, this spider technique is a little bit better. I love it. It's really cool and interesting. I want to play it. I don't see it being highly competitive. It's going to be good. And so when we look at the meta, like, as soon as she comes out, she's going to flash in the pan, be exciting. A lot of people are going to play her. I think she will completely disappear from the game after 2 months. I think you will maybe see her occasionally when people just want to play her. The concept that she's going to break the top tier of models that get played blows me away that people think that.
I will say this. She definitely... One of the things that I heard you say a lot, Aaron, is Midnight Suns and to a lesser extent, Storm. And I agree with Brandon. I don't know if you're playing her in Storm is because you really want to play her, not because you really want to play the best version of Storm, because I think there are X-Men models and forecasters that can take better use of Storm's ability. But... I think Midnight Suns, she might be one of the best four. She might be the best four cost Midnight Sun, even not being a Midnight Sun. I think there's definitely an argument there. But when I look at models in the game that make the 10, I'm looking at them going, I could put them in 4, 5 of different affiliations and get a huge amount of work out of them. And I feel like she is going to get a huge amount of work out of Midnight Suns, maybe Storm, maybe something like Cap 1, maybe, if you need specifically this kit in your Cap 1 list.
Sam could airlift her.
But that doesn't help her on her turn.
Oh, that's true. Sorry.
She has to do it on her turn.
All right. Can I say the meme now, Aaron? Can I say the meme? I'm going to do it.
Fine.
I'm going to meme so hard. All right. You ready, Parker? This is the Rube Goldberg machine of awesome.
I think it has something... Can I guess one part of it? Does one part include MODOK?
No, don't. God damn it.
Okay.
You ruined it.
I didn't. I wanted to guess.
You could have just confirmed it.
Okay, go.
All right. You play Aim Lackeys on her, so she gets a free move action on her activation, and then you play Face Me. And so they move up to attack you, and you bodyguard it to a Quay. So
you
get the free move, you play Face Me, and the free move lines up bodyguard. Then you play Face Me, walk them up to you so they're within the range 3. You've already taken a move action. Then they attack you. You bodyguarded somebody else. That triggers a retaliatory attack. She gets to attack you back on her activation. Now she's taken zero action. She's moved and she's attacked. So she gets to attack, move, attack, move, attack, move.
And reroll completely the second two
attacks. And those two next attacks have full rerolls.
Well, I know what my Texas cards are going to be for the next
two. Fucking legit. It's terrible, but it's going to be so fun. Because she's going to get a short move and three long moves, and then three attacks, two of which have full rerolls.
I don't know if you put this together, but you can also play MODOK in Wakanda, since Okoye is already there. And you can play Spirit of Wakanda, so he can do that turn one. Turn one.
The cute thing is you could also Lethal Protector when you play Face Me.
You could do that.
You could do that. I'm so excited.
Aaron, I am happy. I'll be the voice to say I am happy that you're so excited for her. I think that's super cool. I'm excited for you to try it and to make everybody cry. I'm excited.
Okay.
I'll start. I will be sad if you play her and you're like, you know what? This didn't actually happen as much as I thought it would. So maybe not as good as I thought.
I think she's going to be like Mysterio. I think she's going to come out. People are going to be like, this is the most broken model I've ever seen. And then they put it on the table and go, oh, yeah, she's not nearly as good as I thought. I think the problem is going to be her offense. She's just not going to have reliable enough offense, and she's going to stagnate. Because you're just like, oh, I just don't quite have range to attack anybody. So like, so I'm going to move, hit you, and move back. And she just becomes a hit-and-run model that has a 5-die attack. And that's it. All right. What is next?
All right, so we got some tactics cards. We're going to go fast. I'm not even going to read these.
So fast.
I'm going to let you guys give me a trash scale. I'm going to tell you the title. Ooh. Here we go. Founding Members is our first card.
Mm-hmm.
Trash scale.
This card's awful.
Trash scale, go.
I'm going to give this a 3 out of 10. Actually, no, I take it back. I'm going to give this... Man, it gets worse the longer I read it. This card is very bad. I would give this a 1 out of 10.
Since we know my trash scale differs from Brandon's, it's going to be a negative 5.
That's going to be a 3 for people at home.
A negative 5. Interesting. Negative 5 being,
you'll probably play it a couple times to like be like, I wonder what this card does. And it's not worth ripping up for kindling, but you should probably never pull it out again.
I mean, if you just want to play like the true Sinister Six and you want to meme on people, it's a fun card, but it's not good. The big problem is the opportunity cost. You only have five tactics cards. It's never going
to
break that five.
That's exactly what I was about to say. This was the first spoiled card that I read. I went, whoa, cool. What an interesting new Spider-Foes card. 7. And then I read all the others and I went, oh, 4. Oh, 3. Oh, that's a 2. Like there's just so many other Spider-Foe cards now that are so much better. This is a 2.
Even if you just said it's the only card in the box, it's not competing with any new stuff, it's still bad. Alright, what's next?
Okay. The next one is Surprise Webhead. Surprise Webhead.
Is it written twice or did you just feel like repeating yourself?
I said it twice just for Brandon's edification because I think he's finding these and reading them now for the first time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I found it. Well, you're just going in a weird order, so you're fine. This is clearly a 10. This is an exact copy of one of the best cards in the game.
It is not an exact copy of Wakanda Forever or Midnight, the Midnight Suns card. I can't
remember. All right, hold on. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I see where I misread it. Okay, hold on. 9.
It's 7 out of 10 on my scale. It's close to an 8.5 on yours.
Yeah, this is very good. Generally, when you play this, you're really just trying to kill one model, or you're using Spirit or Frickle Kind of Forever for all their pushing. And so I still think it's got a lot of its original value. And we'll just have to see how it translates with the models in the faction.
That my thing is, I think a lot of people are going to windmill slam it, like I will, as fast as I can to try it. The 2 cost is actually not nothing. I don't know about you guys, but every time when I play Wakanda Forever, sometimes like, oh shit, do I have 2 power on these models? Ugh, I don't have them all. Like, so that might happen. Also, the fact that you can only attack one character with only 0, it's a lot more restrictive. So I'll see
so much worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see if you end up like, oops, I only got to play this once for one attack, it was good-ish, but it's not enough for my slice. But
if you could just spend two power to make an attack with one of your models, I think that's easily worth a tactics card.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if that and that there's where you get your rating of an 8, right?
Yeah.
So the next one is custom upgrades. I'll save you the time, Brandon. It's just obsession.
Blind obsession for foes.
Yeah.
I was reading for something that said it wasn't, but I think it is. The only thing I can think of is if I think maybe blind obsession worked until they were either dazed or KO'd, but I don't know if it was just KO'd. Anyway, this card is obviously very good. This card was banned and now reprinted. This is like drop-off slash special delivery. So as long as we can think of somebody in foes that can really benefit from this, I think it's great. Obviously, dramatically watering down the pool you can choose from is going to be a problem, but it's still a very strong card. I'd give this probably also an 8.
I give it a 9 on my scale, so 9.5 on yours.
Yeah.
I think this is probably... I rate it the same as the previous one. I think they are almost auto includes in a 10, and whether you choose to play it in your 5 is going to be situationally dependent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I immediately went, yay, Carnage! Like, like Carnage just gets tons out of this card, but there are lots of other characters that situationally will play it. This was my favorite card out of it. I also love Blind Obsession. I played it back when there were a bunch of other cards that were much better than it, because I love Blind Obsession. So excited
about this card. It's conveniently just really good on Goblin.
Yes. There's always a good situation for it, but there are also just some good just characters for it just to count on.
It's really good on Rhino, now that I think about it, because Rhino wasn't out when Blind Obsession was out. He's great at chasing somebody down and staying away from other people. Mm-hmm. And he needs more dice because he's only got a 5 dice builder. Okay.
Ock 2 is really good.
I still haven't read his card.
Okay.
It's Ock 1 plus. It really is very, very, very similar.
This guy, what I figured.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
The next one is Strategic Retreat.
You keep jumping around. I have no idea where you're reading these from, but it's way out of order for me.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Keep me on your toes. I'll go first then. I rate this card on my trash scale as a 3. It's not trash, but given all the other yummy things spider foes have, I think you will often have trouble bringing this into your 5 and probably doesn't even make your 10 because of that. I rate this way, way, way below mission objective.
Ooh. Yeah, given that there are 2 restricted slots, plus you're probably looking at either fallback or mission objective already, and putting this in gets real hard, especially with the 2 cards we already read.
There's a huge problem with this card, that if you read it first and you go, oh, better mission objective, you need to read the very first sentence again. Mm-hmm. When the character is targeted. Mission objective is good because you can spend it after you're taking that damage and getting that power. So you almost always have that 2 power to spend, unless they're hitting you with something strange. But you have to do this. You have to have 4 power when you're targeted. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go, oh, it's important right now, before I even know how much damage I'm taking, to move this.
It's much harder for them to stop, though, because it's range 3 instead of range 2. So it's double the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing it on targeting. So if you had the 4 power, it's better. Because they can't, like, hit you with an attack that throws and throw you out of mission objective range.
Also, before the character even attacks, you get to advance short. Like, it's great. Like, this is a good card. But if you're going, 4 better mission objective, it's not the same.
Also, just want to point out that if there isn't anyone within 3 to hand off to, you cannot then advance short away from the attacking character. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I didn't even think about moving before the attack. You can move into bodyguard range.
You can do a lot of things. You can move into cover, bodyguard, but moving will not stop the attack from happening.
Correct. There's no retarget step.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I'd probably give this a 6 out of 10.
Oof.
It's interesting, but probably not getting played.
I think this makes your 10 a lot with spider foes, and you always give it a second glance. Me right now, I love when tactics cards can take the place of other tactics cards that I'm really counting on, and I can make my tactics cards more varied. Like when I sometimes I consider Hulkbuster affiliation just so I can maybe not play Brace and be like, I wonder if I don't have to play Brace. So the fact that this might for Spider Foes take out the fallback mission objective combo and you could just play Strategic Retreat, that's willing to give it a try. I give this one a 5 for that reason. I think it might just combine those, but it's a big might. I have no idea.
Yeah,
it's a big.
How about this, Aaron? What if I told you there's a list build out there where you're going to play Strategic Retreat and Mission Objective?
You have better options.
There you go. Double.
I'm just saying that I think there is a list build where you can build a really tanky brick that can really fight anybody as long as you're not being forced to drop your objective tokens.
Sure. This wasn't a negative card on my scale.
I know. I know you rated it favorably.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, what is that intrigue you at all? It's
It does not.
Okay.
I would have to have someone successfully. Obviously, people are going to successfully play this card. That's not a question. But I'm going to have to see it played well enough over multiple games to convince me that it is worth inclusion of a 5.
Okay. Let's go.
The last card in the Spider Foes, even though it is unaffiliated, it is a Spider Foes type card, is Static Arc. I'm sorry, I lied. There's one more Spider Foes-ish card, but this is the next one. The next one is Static Arc.
Then, okay.
It's negative 10 because I don't want to be drawing pentagrams in the middle of my board.
I want to be drawing pentagrams in the middle of my board. This is a really cute, fun card. I put this in the same category as probably Static Crush. Magnetic Crush.
Magnetic Crush, yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. Mm-hmm. This is probably better, but it's bad.
Yeah, I give this a 0 because it's going into my big box full of foreign language cards that I'll never see again.
Man, if it wasn't restricted to one damage, this card could be really good. Because you have 4 models you're drawing lines between, you could end up doing 4 damage to somebody automatically.
It's only 3 models.
Oh, I thought it was the Construct. Oh, it's not Sandman.
It's the Constructs and Sandman, is it?
I thought Electro
has to spend the power.
Oh, but he's not drawn between.
Right.
He
blasts the sand peoples and they do their little dance.
Yeah, this card's really bad. Never mind. All right, moving on.
What's the last card? Yay on theme.
The last card, unaffiliated, but plays with Vulture, is Rejuvenation.
Trash. 1. 1.
No, it is not a 1.
1.
I think it's a 2.
Yeah, it's better than a 1, but it's irrelevant because nobody's going to play Vulture. And then if you're playing Vulture, you're not going to play this card. So it doesn't matter.
I mean, Children of the Atom has a legitimate place in X-Men.
Yeah, you don't have to play that with Vulture.
I'm looking at the card, Brandon, the card.
Yeah, the first word of the card, Vulture may play.
This is, I think...
If it
I'm going to call it on par with Children, because there's a range restriction. If I'm going to use him as a rejuvenation bot, if you will, I don't like that. I'm not double moving my character so I can play this tactics card to remove a condition.
Children of the Atom is way better than this card.
I might have to read Children of the Atom. What's Children of the Atom do?
You choose any one of your models.
Yep. They remove everything and they gain power?
They gain power equal, yeah.
Sure.
This just removes, it is an AoE remove, but it has to be played by Vulture during his activation. That's dog shit. I'm sorry.
It's not this dog card shit. Is bad. You can activate Vulture on a
non-D-map
to remove. If you can remove key conditions at will from the model of your choice, it is never dog shit.
I was going to say, the only time I could see playing this card is if your opponent had stagger in like droves. And you're like, I have to be able to remove multiple staggers. But the fact that you have to play it on him with him is so restrictive. Oh, man.
I really wish it wasn't during his activation. It is not good, but I don't think it's unplayable.
If you replace the first sentence with a Spider-Foe character, I'm in. This card is good.
I am not going to put this card with my foreign language cards, but it is going in the bin. That it will not get a sleeve. That's how my rating system goes.
I mean, this is better than, what was the fucking lightning card? Static X or whatever it's called. Uh-huh. Static Arc. It's better than Static Arc, but not by much. It's only just a little bit better.
Okay.
All right. What's next?
The next one is Clone Saga.
All right. So this card basically gives shitty Nemesis to one model that shares your alter ego.
It's the best version of Fearful Symmetry.
It is awful. This card is so bad. It's right there with Rejuvenation. You just have no control over name and alter ego.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess if you found that you had a problem matchup of the mirror specifically, and this card helped you enough in the mirror to gain value, I could see it getting played. But that's about the only time. Because that's really what it does, is it just helps you in the mirror.
Isn't that every Web Warriors card? Like,
yeah, they're mirror cards.
You know,
Aunt
May's Wheat Cakes versus All Webbed Up?
Yeah. Wheat Cakes is far better than this card. I just don't see how it's going to help you that much.
I think it's going to be very good in the matchup you... Okay. If you're playing into the mirror, I would probably want to take this card. However, since that happens theoretically so infrequently, it's never going to be worth it to make my 10. Like, I think for my fourth or fifth tactics card, having the ability to, modify, reroll any number. Like, I put my miles across from your miles because I had to play second. I play Clone Saga on my miles. Like, you have to spend your entire next 5 turns running your miles away from me. That's a win.
It does make your miles spend 2 to do it, though. And how are they going to get more power? Like, that sounds terrible. You're not wrong, but losing 2 power on a Web Warrior to make them better with dice sounds bad, right? That sounds like a huge tempo loss.
Let me read it again. Can you play this on your activation to immediately gain the effect? Because if you can, you're going to get those 2 power right back.
Okay.
Probably. Unless, they have Sacrifice or, Webline or, Spider Tracker or, fucking 10 different abilities they use to not die, or you're just trying to kill Cat.
I guess that's not relevant, horrible on Cat.
Yeah.
Doesn't work at well. Works
I know. It doesn't work on Cat. Well, I mean, you could play it on enemy Cat. You'd just be an idiot.
But yeah, so I mean, I come back to Miles. You could play it on Spider Woman. There are a bunch of other people you could play it on. But I could, place my Miles if you don't have Webline up. Or lifesaver.
But I guess the thing I'm thinking about is it doesn't like make them worse on defense. It's like, who are you playing this card on that's going to kill their counterpart easily?
Agent Venom.
I don't know. I guess. I don't see him having the power for it, but I guess in the middle turns it would be good. Yeah, I guess I'd like to see it, but I don't. There's the card slots for webs are already so freaking tight.
New Gwenom.
Attacking other Gwenom?
No, other Gwen.
Yeah.
Or Gwen attacking Gwenom.
Okay. I don't know. This does not seem exciting.
I'm going to agree that it is, again, I feel probably like not going to get played, but I would love to try it.
It's just better. Yeah.
I don't think you're wrong, but I would love to try it.
I'm after staring at it a bit, I feel like somebody could put it in their tin, bring it to a tournament, and say, oops, I played against a Web Warriors player, but as it turns out, I didn't play it. You're like, okay, cool.
The other thing is, like, what if they just don't play the model you think they're going to play? It's literally a dead card.
Yeah.
Because the only models you know for sure they're going to play are probably Gwen 1 and Cat, which, by the way, 2 of the worst models to play this card on. Like, the thing I see it being used for is Peter 2 uses it on Peter 3, or vice versa. That's what I actually think this card might get used for, and I don't think it matters.
I'll concede most of the points, but still be happy to play it.
What was your trash scale, Aaron? I don't know if I heard the number.
I don't think I gave 0. 1. We'll give that a -2.
3 out of 10.
Okay. The last one, we're not going to do Venomized again, because we did that in our Adepticon review. So our last one we have not yet talked about is the Masked Menace.
Where the fuck is this piece of shit?
Go ahead, Aaron, while he's looking for it.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
First of all, this card makes me want to play Web Warriors because I love the Spider-Man comic so much. And I feel like this card just is a huge nod to like one of the biggest tropes in all of the Spider-Man lore, which is, you know, the masked menace of Spider-Man and all these spider people. I love that the concept of this card actually works on the table. It's not fearful symmetry, and it's not some really dumb hat trick you have to pull off. It is going to do something, but do you guys think it's good enough to play?
No, it's not. Okay. Outside of a couple interesting case scenarios.
This reminds me of wet work. It's like, look, I spent power in advance to maybe gain some power. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what? Like, wait, what? Like, what's the optimal situation here? The people that spend power might make one power net?
And
so it's all about, like, one or two people will spend power, and then hopefully the people on your team that do double attacks will get power.
Well, like, one person could spend one to put one camera, right? And sure. Then that one camera will benefit your entire team.
Yeah, and you're like, I all webbed up, and like, I hit here. It's like, yeah, but like...
Or even not all webbed up. Like, Spectacular is going to swing into someone. And by that, I mean I attack them. Get a power if he does damage. Get a power because his ability says so. Then he's going to throw them to do an auto damage. That's going to get him another power. And then he can attack again. So you could gain a total of 3 extra power with Spectacular on that turn. Amazing can get even way more because he's going to be able to momentum.
Sure. I mean,
actually,
assuming you're hitting multiple momentum triggers, it gets 4 max.
I'm not convinced momentum would trigger this. Because momentum's not an attack.
Oh, it says attacker superpower. There's a different card that says by an effect.
Yeah. So I take it back. Momentum wouldn't work. So let's go back to speed, you know, Peter 3. Definitely.
Sure, the people that have scenarios can do more, yep. Right? Like, I get it. But for the most part, a lot of your webs aren't doing a bunch of attacks. Taking a tactics card that costs you power to just maybe gain some more power on somebody else, it's okay. But again, webs card slots are so tight already. Like, there's 3 cards they want in every match that they can't take right now. This card is not making the list. It's cute. It's thematic. It's a fluff card. It's fine.
I mean, I would play this if I chose to play Fighty Webs.
Yeah.
If better I choose not to, it doesn't even make my 10.
Yeah. If you're playing, like, the Symbiote Webs, I could see this a little bit more. But even you still, know, it's just fine.
I want to bring Daredevil. I want to, you know, Spender the World. You know, I'm bringing Agent Venom and Moon Knight. Which I think is very viable. Like, you know, Fighty Webs are a thing. Again, I think it has a place. It's not the way... We locally or me or Quentin specifically have chosen to play webs. So,
I looked at this card and the first thing I thought was, if it didn't say spend one power and it was just this card could gain you extra power if you dealt damage, I still don't know if it cracks the top 10 for webs. And I was like, that's kind of sad. Like, this card would have to be so broken in order to break that. You know what I mean? Just like the effect is just not that outstanding. It's not something.
The reward, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, yeah. Right? Like, you're talking about maybe gaining 1 or 2 power on most turns. It's like, it's fine. I could see you getting a decent amount of power out of it. And it's cool, but like, guess what? You're punching people a lot. You're probably getting power anyway. Like, when webs decide to go hot and like start dropping all the damage on everybody, they get power. That's not their problem. Problem is they don't get power when they're not attacking you. All right, what's next?
That was it, because the last card was minimized, which we already talked about.
Yeah.
We done did the news, except...
Yeah, there's more news.
There is one more bit of news. Aaron has been holding tight this entire time. He's ready to unleash the beast, because AMG announced the Grand Tournaments, a new organized play format.
Aaron, I need you to make me an agreement. I have a request.
Denied. Continue, Parker.
No, I need you to say yes to this.
Oh, okay. I need $1 million and a pepperoni pizza. We're gonna make a deal.
I will give you 1 pepperoni pizza. All right. I want you to let the tiger off the leash. I want you to go full Aaron on this.
I can't. It's too late.
No, I need it.
Parker has effectively drained me of all rage and ichor.
I told you I would.
Aaron, I want you to just think about your collapsed roof and how angry it makes you. I want it to fuel your anger. All right, good.
The new grand tournament format that the AMG is proposing is a little bit different than the world's tournament system. They don't feed into a larger event. They're just basically a way for individuals or organizations to apply for a large tournament with a status called Grand Tournament, and AMG will support that event with a little bit of prize support, it looks like. And that's about it. Basically just saying this is a way that people can play competitively following our docs and using any of the game systems they make, which is all the Star Wars games and Marvel Crisis.
Oh, it's not just Marvel. It's all their games.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. Aaron, both barrels, go.
Both barrels in subdued fashion. So the two key points.
Dude.
Again, I have read the highlights of this. I haven't read the minutiae. So if I'm wrong, someone can yell at me. The two key points here are that there's a requirement to be a GT that you have one judge per 16 players. So if you're going to have a, 32 or heaven forbid 64 player event that you're going to put on, you need four judges for that 64 player event. Which is obviously going to go over 2 days. I can't think of an event I've been to that has had 64 players that required four judges, right? Let's think back to WTC. First of all, everyone there probably didn't need any judges at all, but if they did, it was one or two. And that
did our team even have a judge call?
I don't think so.
I don't think we did.
But it's a bunch of, good experienced players playing each other, everyone understanding the game state and whatnot. And sometimes you need a judge just to be like, is this in or out? Like,
Which it's usually impartial stuff.
Right. Yeah, it's not. I don't understand the rules. Second wind, they're going to have multiple people. If LVO wanted to run this, they have 128 people. How many fucking random people do you need to be a dedicated judge? And they had several, but they need even more. So that's issue number one.
Okay, let's respond to these in turn because we'll forget by the end.
Okay.
I 100% would agree with you. This is a stupid restriction. Anybody who's ever run a tournament knows you need judges, but putting a specific number restriction on it and at this quantity seems really odd. It seems like either they didn't know what they were doing or they really knew what they were doing and they're trying to cause a specific thing to happen. I don't know what that is, but it's just odd. Like, I could see one per 32 or something, or over 32 players, you need three judges or something. I get it. But if you think about it from the perspective of we're going to have a judge team, so it's basically at 64 players, we're going to have three active judges and one head judge. I don't think that's a terrible setup. And so your three baseline judges are there for impartial measuring stuff mostly and answering easy questions, but any actual rules questions go to the head judge.
So that's one. And number two is the challenger document must be complied with to the T. I'll use NashCon as the example. I'm signed up to go to NashCon. There were some less than great circumstances last year with timing and round timers and deciding key games because of it. And so the decision was made, hey, we understand this problem. Let's go to chess clocks, right? Yay, much rejoicing. There's also a 5 games on Saturday, which is nice, and do a top cut on Sunday. The challenger event does not allow for either of those. So as of X many days ago, NashCon applied to be a GT. They are now not using chess clocks. Instead, it's a random secret round timer. They cut the Saturday event down to 4 to comply with the challenger restrictions to have undefeated top cuts on Sunday. I am significantly less excited to go to NashCon because of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get how you can just randomly choose to change the tournament format and structure when people have already bought tickets to it. That kind of blows my mind.
I mean, if you decided you didn't want to go and you messaged them, I'm sure they would refund your ticket.
And my hotel and my airfare.
That's a different thing. Wait, you're flying to NashCon?
No, but other people were.
Okay.
That's a fair... Just as a concept, right?
No, yeah. I'm always for conventions, especially. If you're going to post your shit a year in advance, it needs to not change. You can't just go change your shit like that.
Yeah.
I think that's totally agree. NashCon, not AMG, though, right?
Why would NashCon... here's where we're going to get to it. I do not hey, AMG, for this release, this announcement. They can publish whatever the flying fuck they want, right? Yay. You know, if you want to show up and we're going to have some tournament at Mini Extravaganza, or we're going to sponsor one tournament in every state, you know, email us if you want to be that guy. I don't care. AMG can publish whatever they want. It's up to the community to decide how to engage with the company.
Yeah.
I am a big proponent of an any game system letting the TOs run the tournaments the way they want to run them. It takes a lot of time, energy, and dedication to run a tournament. Mm-hmm. And so if I was the game company, I would want to support those tournaments in the most open way possible, right? Hey, you're running a 64-person tournament. Would you like, you know, X amount of prize support because you're running our game? Now, they don't have to do that, and I don't think they need to, but they could. I think that'd be awesome. But instead, they're doing that. They're like, we're going to give out medals that we're going to make and send to you, but you have to do things our way. And so I would have hoped the community writ large would have been like, thanks, AMG, but no thanks. Instead, the first big example is, you know, bending down and kissing the ring. And that's not where I want to see the community go. So yeah, that's disappointment, not my rage.
I don't know if that's a fair example of what NashCon did, but I have no information on the situation. I didn't know they had done that until you literally just said it. So it definitely seems odd, but I can see the like new and excitement part of like, hey, there's this new format, let's do it. Personally, having AMG be abstinence is the best policy when it comes to competitive gameplay has been very frustrating over the last several years, where they just refuse to engage at all on competitive formats. And so now that they seem to be dipping their toes in the water, I'm kind of excited. I'm looking forward to them doing more of it. I have absolutely no plans to play in a GT ever, because I'm not going to play MCP off a chess clock. I'm just not going to do it. I've been screwed over too many times to ever want to do that again.
I won't say won't and never, but I share your sentiments.
At this point, it's a active protest, so I am saying never.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's exciting news.
This is another one of those things that, kind of like I said with the timelines of it, as much as I enjoyed it, I still think it will never take off because the way they made it automatically restricts the kinds of people that can ever play it by asking people to have these enormous collections, by having this kind of, you know, by having them all, you know, together, being able to travel long distances. Like, people just immediately go, that reaches my affective and my effective filter. I can't do that. So no.
I think that intentional.
Yeah, but I don't agree with that strategy. I don't agree with the strategy that purposely restricts people. When you're, like you said, they're all about that non-competitive format. I think Timelines is an attempt to move away from a highly competitive format, right? Because it's specifically asking people to play not the best stuff in their game. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more of a let's be friends, let's play games. And when you specifically make it so that people can't do it because you make it so the barrier to entry so high, and barrier to being the number of models, I think. I think a lot of people just abstained from it instantly. And
I think that's true.
Then as soon as they put this one dedicated event judge per 16 players, if that's now a rule is only a rule if it's enforced. Will that actually be enforced? Will anybody actually follow that? That's
one subject. It's the same thing. I can schedule a tournament that's a GT, have them mail me the prizes, and then just use chess clocks. What are they going to do? I won't get another GT, but I mean, we'll get the one, right?
A rule is
a
rule.
I'm sure they'll be pissed.
But if this one dedicated event judge per 16 players is support, if that's actually enforced, then they are instantly, and by printing it, that's kind of like what they did with Timelines, they're instantly alienating a group of the community. Like, a portion of the community will say, no thanks, and check out immediately, because they'll go, I don't have the number of people who are willing to not play the game. Like, because not only when you need a judge, not only do you need somebody who's willing to organize and run and create and has the ability and the acumen and the patience to do all that, which is a huge management task, but then you need multiple people who know the game well to not want to play it on the day of the big event so they can just watch other people play it, that's a big ask for most communities.
Especially, I would imagine a lot of these GT type events are going to be non-convention level stuff where it's just like, we're going to have our one big event this 6 month period and it's going to be a GT and we're going to get 24 players. And so we're going to need three judges.
The minimum 32 players.
How do you set a minimum on a tournament in advance?
There you go. There's another one of these things, right?
Stupid.
AMG will only approve your tournament if you think you'll get 32 or they think you'll get 32 plus.
I think all my tournaments are going to get 32. I'm starting to get very annoyed now.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. When you put these things on there, you start out by saying, let's have a new format that everybody can appreciate to be competitive. You go, cool. What's the barrier to entry? You're like, this, and all of a sudden that wall gets taller and taller and taller. You're like, oh, crap. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, we don't have enough people who can.
I agree with pretty much everything you're saying here.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good idea to put barriers on events unless you want it to be an exclusive event. They wanted Timelines to be an exclusive event. I think it was kind of their first move towards competitive play, where it's like, all right, if we're going to do big structured tournaments, we're going to do it on our terms. And so that's why they over-engineered it and they really had a stranglehold on it, and that's Timelines. Mm-hmm. And I think GT is kind of like the first move to, okay, now maybe let's see how this goes. Kind of like when you heard their forum posts about, you know, basically don't expect nerfs, don't expect, like, you know, a balance update, don't beg for models to be changed, stuff like that. And it's like, if you have any, you know, like, don't go to our social media page and yell about models, like, you know, email us and, like, give us constructive feedback and we'll look into it. And so everyone was like, oh man, the company's just trying to, like, deflect all the negative comments. It's like, no, I think what they're doing is actually good, which is training the community not to basically have a defeatist attitude and just throw their hands up. It's like, well, CGR is broken, I'm not going to play anymore. And it's like, they don't want to do that. They want you to be, encouraged to try and overcome it, knowing that they'll put a hand on the brake if they need it. And so there's been a lot of toxic communities for miniatures gaming over the last like 5-10 years. Ever since basically the internet became super prevalent in non-internet games. And so, like, War Machine, once it started getting off the rails, the internet community was just a burning toxic fire. And you couldn't go anywhere without anybody just rage posting everything. It was impossible to interact with the community without hating it. And so I think that's part of what they've been trying to do is steer away from that toxic community. But they're only doing it by, like you said, putting these giant barriered entries on top of things. And I don't like that very much. Like I was saying earlier, like, I'll never play in a GT. I could see them changing the restrictions, or maybe not meaning what they say so much. And, like, let's say I email them, I'm like, hey, I want to run a GT. I'll get 32 people, but, like, we're going to use chess clocks if I run it. Maybe it's just, like, a hand wave rule. It's like, yeah, that's probably fine. As long as you guys aren't, like, banning models that are supposed to be legal and, like, using fake missions and shit like that. So maybe it's a little bit more lax than they say. We'll see. But yeah, if they're hardlining no chest locks, then I won't be running or playing in one until they change that rule.
I guess, Aaron, what I was getting around to with my point is that I don't know if people will have to take a moral stand against this, because I think they already self-sorted into a minority. I think it's just going to be most events that people will be able to play in can't be a grand tournament because they self-sorted it. And unless, like you said, Brandon, they don't mean what they say and they're going to allow more things to actually happen. They don't want to enforce every rule. But if they choose to enforce all these rules, then I think you will only see a few grand tournaments ever. It will be the exception rather than the rule.
What is the wording on the has to use the tournament packet rules? How did they word that bullet point? Can you read that to me? I don't have it pulled up. I'm just curious if it's like a formality thing or if it's like they're very like in bold italicized, like you cannot alter rules.
It just says standard tournament documents by game line and it just has a link to the
does it say the, they use the following events. Or like they must use the following or like no changes to, like,
is each game system like has its own grand each game system has its own grand tournament rules packet, which details how the events must be run. These GT specific packets will be sent to all organizers who are selected to run an event. And then it says standard tournament documents by game line. And it just, when you click on the Marvel Crisis Protocol, it just brings you straight to the Challenger doc.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's just a, like, formality, you know, logistics thing. It's like, hey, these are the guidelines. Go here to find the guidelines. I wonder how much they're married to that.
It says all GTs are Swiss-style tournaments that seek to create an environment as close to the standard game experience as possible. This means the player progression from store level to GT feels natural and organic for those seeking a higher level of competition to challenge their skills.
I think the funny part is nobody in local game stores plays the Challenger doc.
I think there are probably some, like, local stores who don't know any better, and they're, you know, they're probably just playing what AMG made. But
I'm pretty sure by the Challenger doc, you can't use non-official tokens. Like, are you saying that you can't have people at the event use non-official tokens?
Yes, or dice.
Yeah. But, like, they don't even hold that true at, like, Adepticon. Like, that's part of what I'm saying is, like, I wonder how, like, true that statement is all I'm saying.
A rule is only a rule.
I wonder how bendable that rule is before they get mad. I'm just curious.
I think everyone will try to push it, and I think we'll find out what their actual boundaries are pretty soon. And my hope is that they would go, oh, who is this? Oh, Brandon Shirley? Yeah, we know you. Go ahead and do chess clocks. Go. That's what I hope they would do.
It'd probably go the opposite of what you just said. But yeah.
I don't know. I would trust you with chess clocks. But
Pagani hates me so much, he took Shock off of Shocker. That's how much he hates
that's
me.
That's not why he took Shock off of Shocker. He took Shock off of Shocker because he's a purist and believes in the canon.
He laughed at me.
Okay, so here is the actual tournament application. Must follow the relevant GT rules packet, all caps, exactly, and it in entirety.
They probably care then.
As I went to submit one.
All right. Well, that's interesting. Do you guys have anything to say as a final on the news / the episode?
Yeah. I don't think this will impact the way I play Marvel Crisis Protocol at all. Because because
like me, you're never going to go to a GT.
Yeah, and here's the funny thing. I don't think I'll ever miss one because all the things I want to go to, as much as I play, will just not be GTs because GTs will just be so rare.
What happens when Tim makes Warfare a GT?
Then I won't be playing at Warfare.
Right, I'm just saying.
I mean, it's the same thing with timelines. If every convention changed to timelines, the conventions would stop having MCP because there wouldn't be enough attendees. Like, there's a bunch of people that want to play timelines, but it's not for everybody. It's a very specialized thing. And it turns out, just like Parker was saying, anytime you start putting barriers to entry on people and restricting what they can do, they don't like it. Like, why are you jumping through fucking hoops to piss people off? Congrats, you did your job. If everyone's mad now.
If Tim manages to find 8 judges for whatever number of judges he needs... But
how is he going to guarantee 32 judges. Players?
Yeah.
It'll have to be based off of past year's numbers, right? And that's really the only thing, only way AMG can.
Because even if you say they had 35 last year, and so it's like, well, we had 35 last year, so we're going to do a GT this year. And it's like, yeah, that makes sense. So they make it a GT, but then population drops by 20% because it's a GT, and people don't want to play off chess clocks. And so now you're running a GT with 24 people, now it'll never be a GT again. You're like, okay, problem solved. Like, it just fixed itself.
Yeah, or it won't, and everyone will just, you know, play on their round timers, and, you know, this will be the game AMG wants, and I'll go, you know, suck my thumb in a corner.
Yeah, same.
I just bought another game called Judgment. If they
don't want me to play their game, I don't have to, but I want to. Yeah, I don't see GTs being that big of a deal. I see GTs opening flexibility more, maybe after, like, the first season of GTs. And there's kind of like an established thing. But yeah, we'll see. Anyway, you guys ready to wrap it up?
Oh, yeah.
Alrighty. Bye, everybody. This has been Brandon.
And Parker.
And Aaron.
And you've listened to Parker Read the News.
So what are we going to call this thing?
I got it. Okay.
Incredible new fantastic, astonishing, mighty, original, uncanny, sensational podcast.
I'm just going to put down Infamous.
We did it.
Man, we did it so good. So good for you. I'm pumped. I'm excited. Actually, I'll be more excited when Aaron decides what our Mojo World is this week.
Oh, give me 10 minutes.
Are we going to be perfectly silent for 10 minutes? Because this would be awesome if we managed to do it. I know I already broke it, but that would have been awesome if there was just no audio and everybody was just sitting, listening, waiting for Aaron to choose something.
I have told you this many times, but silence is irrelevant because it gets cut out.
I listen to this podcast, and sometimes silence sticks. I'm guessing it's just because it's picking up some ambient noise.
Yeah.
But sometimes I do hear it.
There is down, like, time, but it's only, like, actual silence that gets cut out.
I am open to suggestions and or forfeiting my pick.
There is a suggestion list in the document that is there in case we can't come up with something.
Oh, we created a document?
We've had a document since day one.
Have we, though? I don't know where this document lives.
Let's see. I think it'd be easier to read you some options than just to direct you to this thing.
Sure.
It looks like the three options that are listed here.
I see them now.
One was sci-fi TV shows, which was one of my choices, actually, that I thought of the last time. Did we ever do sci-fi? I thought the reason I didn't pick it last week is I thought we did sci-fi TV shows. Am I crazy that we did?
We did in the last year, but we have not this year.
Ah, okay. Anything involving Brad Pitt? That'd be a pretty long list, actually.
Yeah.
Let's do that one. We'll do Brad Pitt.
Brad films. Pitt?
Movies. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I like this. The Pittman.
I need to go get something for my
phone. We're going
to
do Brad Pitt films, not named seven.
Okay.
Because you think one of us is...
Because everyone is going to pick seven first.
Oh, you think?
And not our listenership. Our listenership would vote for seven.
I definitely would not have picked seven first.
I would not have also not have picked seven first, but...
Yeah, the category stands, Aaron, motherfuckers.
Okay.
I think Aaron just likes seven and doesn't like that he can't pick it first. If he picks... I don't think we can let you veto a single
Oh,
movie.
He can't? I think it's overrated, so... it's probably not.
Well, then don't pick it.
It would not have been my pick.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to pick it. I don't think it makes my... I don't even think it makes my three. I don't think. His filmography is enormous, so... does it... It has to... Oh, yeah. Yeah, so never mind. Never mind. Because he's an executive producer on a lot of stuff, but you're saying starring.
Yeah.
I know what Brandon's taking first. I know we no longer get to bet, but while he's not here, I'm going to say Deadpool 2, because he loves that cameo so much. I'm just going to bet that's what he's doing. Man, I have seen so many of these movies, and I appreciate so many of them. This is going to be hard. I can tell you this. You guys can't take all my choices. I have too many. You lose preemptively.
Do I, though?
I mean, you won't lose the voting, because I think you can definitely beat me in the voting, but...
I will not win this one. It's no Mexican pizza.
You know, you're right. It's not Mexican pizza. You are correct. I already have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 movies that I say are really important to see before you die. And I'm not including all the ones I've seen on his filmography. Just the ones I love.
Cool. I have far fewer.
I'm going to do my best not to cough through most of the episode.
Have you been sick all day? Is that...
I think it's mostly allergies, but...
My dad says he's never, ever been sick. Ever. Now, he has been deathly ill many times, but he says he's never, ever sick. And he says that, I think, kind of... I don't think he's actually bragging that much or trying to be a turd. I think he believes in mind over matter. He truly believes in this idea that if he just wills himself, like Dennis from Always Sunny, like, sickness be gone! Like, he... That's a joke in that show, but he lives that joke. Like, he believes that if he's just not sick, he won't be sick. Is that how you roll, Brandon? Like, you're just not sick? Or...
I acknowledge that I'm sick, but also at the same time, I don't let it like stop me from doing things. Mm-hmm. It's like, just because you're tired and achy and don't feel well doesn't mean you can't do stuff. And so, like, I get annoyed when people are like, "Oh, I wasn't feeling well." It's like, "What do you mean?" It's like, "Oh, I had a very mild cold, so you didn't like do anything for 4 days." And I'm like, "Yeah, basically." I'm like, okay,
yeah.
It was like so- I get. If you're very contagious and sick, not going to places where there are tons of people and getting them sick, like, obviously that's not smart, but you're like, you couldn't, like, do your laundry because you were sick. Like, that was your excuse. Yeah. Like, come on. You couldn't do dishes because you were sick. Like, come on.
Like, calling in sick to work because you had Taco Bell yesterday.
Yeah. Nobody would ever do that. That'd be embarrassing as shit.
Absolutely.
This sounds like you guys have... This sounds
if
like
somebody
joke.
Said that, I would lose all respect for them.
This sounds like an inside joke. The more you like say it, the more it sounds like something...
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Nobody would ever do that.
Okay, good.
Very specifically, nobody you know. Like, today. It'd be impossible. I think you know what I'm saying.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
I scribbled down a handful of Brad Pitt movies, but I think I'm just going to off the cuff it because I've seen so many.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much of his filmography I've seen, but apparently I'm a fan. Or he's just prolific in the genres that I appreciate.
He's incredibly prolific in both genres, but also his movies tend to be successful.
Yeah, that's true.
Are you guys following the AMG GT announcement?
No. AMG GT?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, I don't know what that is.
Okay, Atomic Mass Games has released a new tournament. Packet's the wrong word. Program is probably a better word. They're calling them grand tournaments. You can apply to be a grand tournament if you would like to. There are some very specific requirements, namely that you must follow every line in the challenger document to the letter. You must provide no less than one judge for 16 people. I think those are it. And if do that, AMG will give you like some medals to give out.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, it says grand tournaments do not feed into a larger event. There's no ranking system or path. Every GT run during the season is the same level of competition or reward as every other GT.
I mean, this is news. We should talk about this.
We should, but I'm going to rant about it. So I don't know if you want me to get that on my system now or want me to go for more.
Let's get into news. Okay. I'll save it for after. You know what? Let's do it after all the models and tactics cards get you nice and worn out by then. You'll have little left in the tank.
I might have little left in the tank.
I'm going to go to sleep while we're doing the models so I can save my energy.
Deal. I'll just blather on for 45 minutes. You guys can take a nap.
We can't handle two of those.
You guys can just put your feet up, relax. Aaron can conserve his strength. Brandon can conserve his voice. The listeners will all be lulled by the sultry sounds of my analysis.
My throat doesn't hurt. It's just really scratchy.
That's what pain is called, Brandon.
No, it's just like weird discomfort. It's more of a tickle than pain.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's allergies.
When I get a throat tickle, it's usually the start of getting sick, or it goes away. Depends.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think somebody told me I probably have nasal drip, which apparently is something that happens in the spring.
Yeah.
But basically, in this time period, I will get congested a lot, and I'll get a really scratchy throat occasionally. And it's just like, it just happens.
Yeah, it happens because your sinuses are trying to clear out the pollen. And so it's just draining more.
And so I can tell that like all day today, I felt like my sinuses were I don't know, clogged, even though I can breathe fine.
I'm just going to give one anecdote about pollen. In my class the other day, one of my students said, "Man, I have really bad allergies." And then one of my other students says, "I wish these plants would stop trying to have sex all the time." And and the students, everyone in the room, because it's middle school students, everyone went, like mouth agape. And the kid was like, "What?" And I was like, "Yeah, what are you guys freaking out about?" He's like, "Plants are having sex?" I go, "Yes, constantly. All over." And they were just like, "What?" I was like, what do you guys think pollen is? Like, it was this wonderful conversation where everything I said, like they would get perfectly silent for a sentence to hear my description of plant reproduction, and then they would just gasp and guffaw for like 35, and then they would get perfectly silent as I would explain something else, and they'd gasp and guffaw. It was awesome.
You should just show them the scene from Tropic Thunder when they drop the bombs, and and they're like, "Mother Nature just pissed her pants, dude."
Yeah, it's
that way they'll understand.
It was just I was like, "Yeah." So how? And the boy kid was like, "So you mean like fruit or like plant babies?" I go, "No. It's like the skin of the baby that gets really fat. So I guess like the fat deposits around a baby." They're like, we're eating the space around a baby. Where's the baby?" I go, "They're called seeds." I go, and the kid had that like face from the meme where his head was exploding. He was like, "Seeds are baby plants." Like he could not. he couldn't even in that moment. I just thought that was it was awesome. That was like a whole 15 minutes of my humanities class today. It was just kids getting their minds blown left and right. It was perfect. So your discussion about pollen just in your nasal cavity made me think of that. Just plant sex going up in there where it can't be done. Those little sperm are finding nothing except Brandon's mucus.
Yep.
We ready to roll? I feel like we got tons. So much.
Oh, good. Because I think it's going to last like 20 minutes and we're going
to
be done.
You think? Well, I mean, with your guys' energy level, I'm going to try to carry it to 10. But we'll see how it goes.
Carry what to 10?
The discussion of these new cards.
We'll see. We definitely don't try and embellish, because then it'll just be you nonstop talking for an hour. And we don't want that.
That's true.
Okay. We did it.
We did it. Thank you for telling me and reminding me about the news. Did I do a better job after you said something?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I tried.
There was a couple times you kind of did it again, but it's like, it's not that big of a deal, except on like the longer cards, because what was happening before is we'd go like, "This model has hit and run. It's the standard hit and run, just like the hit and run on Green Goblin. Hit and run is an active superpower."
Yeah,
that's like, I was like, "Oh my god, dude, you summarized it twice and then read it in full. Like, god, yeah. I'm going to kill myself."
I hear it. I hear what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're
saying. No, yeah. Like, but if you're like trying to make it make sense because it's confusing, then I get that. But then if you're going to summarize it, don't read it also. It's like, this is a terrain throw up to size 3, throws medium. Like, move on. Like, they get it. They're smart people. All right. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll do Mojo. You guys feel free to talk, obviously.
Aaron, we're breaking our New Year's resolution hard.
Yes, you are.
Note the time of death, 4:18 midnight at April 18th. We no longer can say we did it, and we were done by midnight.
I should have just logged off.
We could have. Honestly, I wanted to talk about that AMG thing, and I wanted to know why you were upset.
I can't decide if I'm just being petulant or if it's a legitimate feeling and or choice I can make to choose not to play in a non-chess clock event. I think a lot of it was the fact that it wasn't played on chess clocks last year, and now it changed. It changed to being on chess clocks because it was understood that that is the best way to play high-level competitive MCP. And the only reason it was changed was not because the tournament would be better for it. The only reason it was changed was because AMG said, that just makes my soul just die a little bit on the inside. And so I don't know. I mean, I messaged the organizer like, how do I get a refund? Again, I've got the hotel. I'm traveling. I just got to figure out, first of all, are they going to be a GT or is it going to be denied? I'm pretty sure that will be a GT. At which case, do I pull the trigger on getting a refund and being like, I'm out? Or do I go and play in an event, even though there are round timers? Like, I don't know. I've got some time to think about it and make up my mind, but...
I'm very interested in going to NashCon if I am able to record games. Do you know who runs stuff? I assume you do, since you were potentially going to run stuff yourself.
Yeah.
If you could put me in contact with them, I'd like to get the ball rolling on that so I know if I'm going or not.
Yeah.
Cool. You guys ready for Mojo?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I actually, the more I think about this, I think we might have done this exact thing before, but I'm not sure.
No, we have never done him.
Okay. All right. This week in Mojo World Rankings, we've got Brad Pitt movies, specifically including the movie Seven. And with my first pick, fucking got his ass. Well, I have to find my list. I think Seven was at the top. I'll do Ocean's 11. Parker, what is your first pick?
I'm going to go with probably my first interaction with him. I'm going to go back to the beginning and say Fight Club.
I knew somebody was going to say Fight Club. I've never been a Fight Club guy. I watched it at a weird time.
I love Fight Club.
It's a fair pick, obviously, as your first pick. So definitely don't disagree at all. It's just not my movie. Aaron, you got double back-to-backers right here.
Well, the first one is Seven.
You fucking piece of shit.
And the second one
Wait, what?
Moneyball.
It was a game. Oh, you fuck. That was my next one.
What? Did you really do exactly the thing?
No, yeah, he's just fucking with us.
Okay. No, those are my two.
Yeah. Oh, he just God. Knew he didn't want somebody else to take his favorite movie.
No. I didn't want whatever.
That's awesome.
Seven's not even that good.
We'll see. We'll see who wins this week.
Okay. You said whatever, so just to be clear, I just want
to cards on the table. He's trying to get the popular vote. I'm not upset. Movies he actually likes.
I'm not upset, Aaron. You just didn't want us to take the movie Seven because you really wanted to take it?
No.
He's popular voting.
I think the proletariat that listens to this podcast.
What you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be picking movies you liked. You specifically said you don't like this movie.
I'm proving a point.
Yeah. Okay.
But just so you know, like, your votes won't count.
Okay, here we go.
Except it's my favorite movie ever.
I am willing to accept this experiment on behalf of this particular topic. Let's do it.
All right. Next up, Parker's second pick.
Okay. My second pick is going to be...
Yeah, I really want that Moneyball.
My second pick is going to be Inglourious Basterds.
Ooh, that's a good one. All right. Again, I didn't look anything up. I just went on top of my head on my feels. So I'm ready to go. I've got Fury. I love Fury.
Ah, it's on my list.
Yeah. And 12 Monkeys. Mm. That movie's just crazy. One of, I think, the better time travel movies. All right. Parker, final pick.
This is going to be like picking a child. I love all these movies, but I'm actually going to go with the one that I actually quote the most and go with Megamind.
Oh, that doesn't count.
He's one of the main characters in Megamind.
He is not one of the main. He's got like four lines.
He has a lot of lines, actually, but yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Aaron, your final pick. Seven again. Can't lose.
The Departed.
Is he in that?
What?
I don't think he's in that. I think you're just thinking of Leo's character who looks like him from Seven.
Yeah, he is not.
Yeah, it's close. The
it's not close at all.
I love that you're trying to win just by going like as dude as you can. Sorry,
we already took a bunch of your bastard, so you actually have some good ones there.
He's going to be so mad when he realizes I don't put Seven on his selection. He only gets two movies.
Do you actually like Brad Pitt, or do you just have a Brad Pitt movie? I'm curious.
I don't really have an actual Brad Pitt movie. Trying to remember some of the older ones as to whether I actually like them or not.
I mean, there's the British stuff that he's in. Snatch.
Snatch is a popular bro movie.
Snatch is a big bro movie.
Yeah, but if I haven't seen it, I can't recommend it.
Okay. Unless it's Seven.
I have seen that.
Ocean's 13?
We're going to do... No, we already took 11.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith is right up your alley.
Yeah, that one's going to lose me votes.
I don't think so. It's fun. It knows what it is.
Bad, but I hesitate recommending that to anyone.
Troy
I'm debating fun. Between Interview with the Vampire and Legends of the Fall.
Oh, Vampire, for sure.
If you're trying to win with votes of the two of those, Legends
of the Fall that's an all-time classic movie. I totally forgot he was in.
Yeah, it's Pitten.
Yeah, I don't think about that Pitten movie. Cruise.
Yeah, okay, I've at least seen that one. We'll do Interview with the Vampire. No, the only movie that I really enjoy with Brad Pitt's Moneyball.
Moneyball's
and
great.
Probably Fight Club would have been my second. Like those two, I could highly recommend as a Brad Pitt film. Mm-hmm. Seven is also actually really good. So maybe those three.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like Hollywood that much. Brad Pitt's in a ton of stuff though.
I love Burn After Reading, like a lot.
I don't remember that.
Meet
Joe Black, I think, is one. I haven't seen that either.
I love Meet Joe Black. I had The Big Short. Burn After Reading, Meet Joe Black, and Troy were my.
I feel bad for liking Troy because I feel like it's like 300. It's obviously much better than 300 from like a cinematic movie, but like I watched it when I was very young, and every movie I liked at that age is terrible. Like it was like, what's your favorite movie? It was like Scorpion King, obviously, like, just trash.
Yeah.
Like Chronicles of Riddick, like just awful teenager movies, right? Like, but that I loved them, but I know that other people didn't. So I just lumped Troy in there, and it just comes to find out other people actually liked it. Anyway, this is a good list. This will be fun. All right, you guys got anything else?
Nope.
No. I'm going to come see you guys tomorrow. Play some MCP.
Cool. Good night, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye now.